Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can y'all feel it? Are you feeling it? Is everybody feeling it?
I'm feeling it.
Okay. James, are you feeling it?
Feeling it.
Okay.
James is feeling it.
Yay. Everybody's feeling it. So, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. I said orgy. You're supposed to giggle. So anyway, this is the Freedom Fiends. We have me, Diana, the Laughing Kitty, and we have Daryl. Daryl, what is your wrestling name?
Working on it.
Do you have one? Working on it. James, do you have one?
I don't think we ever did one for me.
You never did one for you?
No.
I think I'm pretty sure Lou came up with mine. I don't know if I came up with my own or not, but anyway. So, how's everybody doing tonight?
Relatively okay.
Okay.
It is pleasant.
Okay. Yeah. So, Daryl, you live in Hawaii.
Dana, that's true. Yes.
You lucky dog, you. What island?
You can do it too.
Yeah.
The big island.
Yeah.
The one that's called Hawaii.
That's called Hawaii. Yes, and I have family there, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, what part of Hawaii do you live on?
The east side, not too far from the big city, Hilo.
Hilo, okay, yeah. So I have, my family is in, I'm not even sure how to pronounce this, and this is just where they get their mail. They live more kind of on the lower slope of Mauna Kea, and they get their mail in Pau'ilo.
Pau'ilo? Pau'ilo, yep.
Pau'ilo, yeah.
You said it correctly.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, my aunt, I have an aunt and uncle that live there, and he actually runs a solar power business, and it's pretty impressive. They, like, their whole thing, I mean, yeah, where they live is amazing. It's so beautiful there. So do you live near the ocean or what?
I do live really near the ocean. I'm less than a football field away from the ocean right here.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I hear the waves quite loud at night and sometimes in the day, too.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
But I didn't always. It took me a long time to move down the hill down to here, you know.
Right. Have you lived in Hawaii for a long time?
It's been almost 9 years this August.
Oh, okay. Where did you move there from?
I moved here from Vermont because we got the time to say the story. I moved here from Vermont because I wanted to get a license of acupuncture, and I wanted to go to a rural school to do so, and I found one here. And of all the places to move and basically start life over, I wanted it to be really sweet, so I chose this island.
That's awesome.
That's the quick story.
So you wanted to go to a rural school for acupuncture?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you understand this, but acupuncture colleges are like trade schools. They give you a medical trade and a medical license and all these kinds of things. And there are big schools that have some degree of safety and longevity and things like that, especially the Californian ones, though they're very pricey and expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And they require you to do all kinds of undergrad courses and things like that that are totally unnecessary compared to what you need to do to get into practice.
Right.
And not to mention all the autopsies and things like that. And I just really didn't want to get into opening corpses and things like that.
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me?
I am not kidding you. That's very much really, like, it's just a lot of coursework, including, you know, formaldehyde exposure for opening up cadavers, etc., for anatomy classes. I wanted instead a small school that's kind of a lot more funky and has a greater variety of information coming in, because I was basically doing college over again because the college I did in Vermont failed, went out of business, and a lot of us were given the middle finger by the acupuncture board of Vermont. So,
Oh my goodness.
They go somewhere else to learn. All of your credits are ours, basically, you know. So I did, and I finished it. And I taught there, and then that college went out of business, and I still am in practice, acupuncturist.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah.
So do either of you ever get acupuncture ever?
Both never. Of you?
I've never have, and but I've been very interested in it because I've, you know, I don't know, I have
You're both too young. You have no health problems when you're young. Why would you need that, you know?
Well, what can, I've definitely had some neck and back issues. So, I mean, and I mean, also too, I mean, acupuncture is all, I mean, it's all about energy alignment, right? I mean, it's like working with your ki or chi.
You know what's crazy? Imagine, Diana, that they named your specific the career after one of the tools that you did, but in reality, you use a whole lot of other tools. Well, that's Oriental medicine. Acupuncture is what it's named after. So I have a lot of tools, things that adjust the chemistry of the body, even training how to physically manipulate parts of the body. That's structural work. So, structural like work,
a little bit of almost chiropractic kind of stuff in there?
Almost, except for, you know, I'm not allowed to say that, James. But, you know, I can say I'm able to use Tui Na style massage therapy, which achieves the same thing.
Tui Na. You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a lot of, you know, I can give an oriental medical diagnosis, but I can't give a medical diagnosis.
So if I allegedly wanted to go to a chiropractor and get, go to an acupuncturist and ask for what kind of massage?
Tui Na.
Tui Na.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Would it be better to get it at an acupuncturist then, like for the pocketbook?
Not necessarily, no. I mean,
unfortunately.
I mean, if it's just as simple as just putting a vertebrae back into place and that was what your gist was. But if you're, you know, chances are, if it's pain, if it's long-standing chronic illness, yeah, you're probably, you know, it's kind of 50-50, actually. Some chiropractors can get the job done really quickly, and some acupuncturists can. So it's kind of hard to say, you know. And it's just the problem is this. If it's chronic and it requires some more medicines and herbals to throw at it, that would be an acupuncturist usually. But if a chiropractor does it, they're awesome. I learned from a chiropractor. I was an assistant to a chiropractor first before being an acupuncturist. They're awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd seen a chiropractor. I mean, I've seen chiropractors before. I actually saw one for a fairly, not a super long period of time, but for a few months anyway. So I don't know. I'm not sure how much it helped me, but... Well,
please understand, there are like so many kinds of both of these disciplines, you know?
Have you heard of network chiropractic?
Of course, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, we need to talk about that some more. Yeah. Because I had, there was a woman I saw when I was in North Carolina. She was a network chiropractor, and that was pretty amazing. Like, I enjoyed that a lot.
Wow. That's a sign.
I got a lot out of that.
And, yeah. I probably wouldn't. So it works for Diana. I don't know about you and me, James. I don't think network would work for us. And I'm just,
I don't know what that is.
I know. It's kind of like suddenly we're going to talk about Bitcoin and leave her in the dust, you know?
Hey, I know about Bitcoin. What? I've got some Bitcoins.
Okay, well, no, that's not
I
true.
I have like a fraction of Bitcoin.
Well, that's awesome. But yeah, I moved here and I from Vermont and I got high-speed internet. And that's basically what opened my mind to these liberty things, you know.
Oh, so okay. Yeah. So
that's what changed
that was going to be, my next question for you. Yeah.
No, it's too late.
A little bit more time in this segment. No, don't say that. Yeah. So yeah. You are, I don't know, James, you've told your story, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I did.
But not to me.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I have at one point as well. But Daryl. So, yeah, we all want to know, you know, what motivated you and what led you down the primrose path of liberty.
You know, I was trying to trace it down. What was the path of the specific URLs that led me there? But one way or another, it was like getting through to listen to Brett Finott on the School Sucks podcast, SchoolSexProject.com. Hearing his, like, one of his early interviews, his first year of podcasting, he was probably like four episodes in, and he basically explained something very clear and simple that then I was listening to Wes Bertrand of Complete Liberty podcast, and then they kind of both sent me off to classic Stefan Molyneux, where I got to hear similar, you know, basically though the thing was very clearly spelled out in a short number of things, but I pretty much got the gist of it once Brett explained it. It was done. And from then on, it was just a matter of applying it in all these types of ways. And while at the same time, I was going through my master's program to get the license of acupuncture.
Right.
And holding together a kind of failing marriage, definitely. So,
So, but what, you know, but you had to be, I feel like that's with that to hear, like to listen to the podcast that you listen to, like School Sucks and everything, that you have to be sort of ripe for, to accept that message.
I was so left. I was so.
I don't mean
right.
I didn't say right. I said ripe, like fruit.
Oh, ripe. Oh, ripe.
Yeah, ripe. I didn't. Yeah. I just didn't want a plosive. You know what I mean? I have a problem with that. So, So, yeah. I feel like you have to be sort of like, I don't know, because I felt like when I really started getting that message, that it was time for me. You know, like it was like something had like led me to that. So were you like already questioning the government? Were you like saying, you know, this crap is messed up and blah, blah, blah. Like what, like, yeah. Where were you when you started hearing these? Listening.
I'm sorry, sir. An older boy told me to do it.
I just voted for Obama and thinking that I was doing the right thing by doing a paper ballot. Like, that was over here, 2008. I was listening to the Corbett Report, CorbettReport.com. That like interesting news.
I'm familiar with that.
So it was. He's very critical of all governments, and I never stopped being critical. I listened to very left-leaning people like Michael Parenti and other people. Like I did a lot of Democracy Now when I was back in Vermont, and. It's very critical once the when the government's all right leaning, which was for a long period of time, and the critique of it kind of, I found the critique of it very weak.
Meow.
Meow.
That means we're about to be going to the break. So,
no doubt.
But we'll definitely come back and talk
You're
more about
listening to
Daryl's trip to Liberty,
with Michael Dean, and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit three felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Worms.
Wow, meow, meow, meow. Sounds kind of like a cat. Okay, and we're back. From the break, and before we broke off, Daryl was on a roll. So, Daryl, please continue your train of thought there.
What I was trying to answer.
We'll settle this argument. Give me Lysander Spooner on the Ouija board, stat.
I'm so happy for the pocket alibi. I was trying to answer Diana's question. How did I come to the ideas of liberty and being so pro-choice across the board? Yeah, I did come as a left-leaning person. I did go through the Democracy Now! Michael Parente loop of criticizing government. I moved here. I got high-speed internet. I got a more objective look at recent political events through the CorbettReport.com. Mm-hmm. I found Brett Fanon in the School Sucks podcast. I just listed too many things. But basically, I started hearing questions about the gun in the room. That was a really important question of how is school funded?
Right.
And that opened up a very big door. So,
you didn't balk at that at all? Like, you didn't go, well, wait a minute.
No, I just said, oh, wait, there's a big problem. And then from there, it became a cascade failure of, and now everything that is based on coercion, which
so you weren't
is
all
single,
like, what about the children? You weren't all like that? Like,
no, I have a child. I saw what government schools do. They're very substandard, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I already knew something was majorly wrong. In fact, I'd already listened to the audiobook of The Underground History of American Education, you know, before I even moved here.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That audiobook's been out for a while. I've got links to that, but I have other links to send to people right now.
So moving out to Hawaii kind of was like a turning point almost? Like, is that kind of what I'm understanding, or am I hearing this wrong?
Can you say the word again? It was like a what?
Like a turning point almost, or like an awakening once you moved out there?
It was a huge awakening, James, yeah. It was suddenly having access to so much more information and realizing that I am surrounded by the same type of blind obedience all around me, including the wife I had at the time, you know, and many of the people who were acupuncture students along with me. But of course, I gave them a pass because they were all busy struggling to learn a thing that I already pretty much had down about 6 years before that. I was going through the motions of having to go through school, but I was seeing basically that this was the biggest thing was the lack of other people who would understand what we're all talking about. You know, I just took the whole, I like it that people, certainly women, can choose what they want to do with their body. And I took that pro-choice attitude towards everything. Guns and ownership in general, you know. I took it across the board. Like, I would like pro-choice. And then it's like, so how do I define what makes that awesome? And it became ownership, boundaries, and property. And, that pretty much solidified it. I mean, do you guys remember what classic Stefan Molyneux was like? I don't know if you're too young for that.
I've heard some of it. I mean, he was definitely one of my first.
He's a liar, he's a socialist, and his feet stink.
Well, that's nowadays.
I mean, he was definitely one of the first people I listened to. Probably, I would say for me, like, the person that I listened to the most in the beginning that influenced me was Ben Stone.
Oh, yeah.
Ben Stone's really good.
And really, I think, I mean, I loved from the very beginning listening to, and I mean, this is really not, I'm not trying to suck up to Michael or anything like that, but I loved Freedom Fiends. Like, I loved, and there was also Anarchy Gumbo that he did.
I love that show.
Yeah. And I mean, those were like, it was Ben Stone and Freedom Fiends definitely that were like most influential, I think, for me. And, from the beginning, but yeah, I love like School Sucks Project and the Corbett Report. I don't know if you're familiar with Sybelle Edmonds. Did you read that book? Her book, Classified Woman.
I didn't read her book, but I certainly hear her and James on the show on their show a lot.
Yeah, that was also reading that book was that was a clincher too for me. It's like our government really sucks.
Are you sure?
I mean, the government really sucks.
Yeah, thank you. Mouse pocketing is not going to happen tonight.
I know, sorry. Forgive my mouse pocketing mistake here. All right, so we'll be back after the break.
Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
And we're back with the Freedom Fiends.
We're fiends.
Worms.
No.
So... We have some things to cover here, and one of the articles that was provided to us by our fearless leader, and by R, I mean James, Daryl, and me. I can say that. I can say R when it comes to, like, I'm talking about, like, you know, us kind of thing, right?
Our. Or can you?
Okay, our, whatever. Who corrected me? I'm sorry.
That was the board op.
Okay, our, sorry. Does not rhyme with R. About this fella, Josh Walker. And so, James, you recently saw a movie. And
our listeners should remember from last week, if they were listening last week, we actually talked about a movie based on a book that ties in with this story a little bit here. But this 26-year-old university student from, you know, Wales in the United Kingdom, he went over and volunteered to go fight ISIS with the People's Protection Unit, or YPG, which is a Kurdish-led militia. And he was battling ISIS for about 6 months, you know, over the course of this, you know, 6 months he... you know, learn to speak Kurdish, shoot AKs, and, you know, he's fighting in this militia unit made up of a lot of, you know, broad range of people, Kurds, Arabs, Americans, Canadians, European volunteers, to go and fight ISIS. You know, do what, the, you know, the United States government says it's supposed to be doing. to actually do it. So he went over there and he's actually doing what,
allegedly,
you know. He's actually over there fighting for freedom in the Middle East, unlike the United States. And so, you know, and he had faced suicide bombers, and he helped, you know, the YPG in its advance towards Raqqa, which is the capital of the Islamic State Caliphate. But in December, he returned to London. And apparently, you know, the authorities in London were not very happy to see him, and they took him into custody, interrogated him, searched his apartment, confiscated his laptop, notebooks, and everything, and was charged under counterterrorism laws, not because of his activities in Syria, but because they had found in his drawer, under his bed, a partial copy of the Anarchist cookbook. Not even a full copy, a partial copy. Which, you know, would probably be something that you would want to know, like the different, you know, homebrew ways to make traps and explosives and stuff like that, if you're going off to fight a DIY war against ISIS, you know. So the information in that book probably was pretty useful to him in his battle against ISIS, you know. Right. But, you know, he's the first anti-Islamic State fighter to be prosecuted by the British authorities under terrorism laws after returning to the UK. And not to mention that he's also the only person in the country who ever faced a terror charge merely for owning a copy of a book.
All right. Yeah, not even the full book. Just a partial copy.
Just, for owning a book.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting kind of in vogue over there in Europe, right? Because over in Germany, if you own a certain book that says anything questionable about, say, Holocaust victim numbers, you could go to jail there, too, for owning one of those books. Isn't that fascinating, you know?
That is pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you know, this... I wonder, what do you think? Do you guys think that they actually planted the anarchist cookbook on this guy?
They could have.
I mean,
but
it's possible. It's
possible, but I don't see... It is a... you know, it would be something that would be useful to his training to go up in there, so I could understand him having a copy of it.
Right.
You know, but he's due to go to trial in October. He's facing up to 10 years in prison.
Jesus.
He's free on bail right now, so good news. He's free on bail. But the big thing is that, you know, he was just arrested for having a book. And, you know, this guy's a hero. This guy's a hero who, you know, went over to go fight ISIS when no one else is really doing that.
Right.
You know, you got the United
States. He's actually doing it.
The United States is over there too busy messing with Russia and Assad to worry about ISIS. And, you know, he goes over there and actually goes and fights ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
And now...
and comes back and gets arrested.
Comes back and gets arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy. And it's a book that he would need to know the kind of stuff that's in that book in order to battle ISIS. The kind of stuff that would be useful information for him in this fight.
Even if it wasn't. I mean, even if it wasn't just the him having a book that, and it says in the article, it's freely available in its entirety on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody could have the book. So it's just like, you know, just the fact that he had it. And I don't know. I mean, it's crazy.
And like we covered last week in the show, I just want to point this out for all the listeners. The Anarchist Cookbook is a book that was, just in case people missed it, it's a book that is something that's put together in the 70s, by an angsty teenager who took all the information out of old U.S. military manuals that you find anywhere on a military surplus store. All the information in the book is just recycled U.S. military surplus, explosives and IED manuals and kind of stuff like that. Stuff that you walk into any Army Navy store, buy it off the shelf for like $2, you know. So it's just that. That's all that's in this book. It's nothing, nothing that was secret, nothing that, was invented or anything. It's all stuff that military people need to know. It's stuff out of military manuals.
Right.
It's just, packaged in a anti-authoritarian manner.
Right. And it's got that title, word. It's got the scary word.
It's got
the
scary anarchist word in the title of it.
Yeah.
But it's all stuff that...
Not cookbook, but anarchist.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all the scary A word.
If it had been... that could be a great show title, but yeah.
so that's all that's in this book. There's a few other things in the book, but as far as like the weaponry stuff, it's all stuff out of, these military manuals, which is stuff that military people need to know to go off and fight wars, which is what he was doing when, the governments of the world are failing. He goes and joins up a people's militia that's actually fighting against ISIS and protecting people from, these crazy fascist Islamic radicals. That are going out and beheading people in the streets and stuff. He's actually the one defending people from that. And unlike your governments, where your governments failed. And what does the governments do? Arrest him for it.
Yeah.
Didn't play nice with the hand that feeds him.
No.
Yeah, he didn't toe the line properly.
Or happened to be a very convenient fall guy, Patsy, for something or someone. You know. There's always something when they take someone down. Either wrong place, wrong time, or you really bit the hand that was feeding you.
You know? Right, and well, how dare he make the British government look bad?
Right, that would really be biting that hand, you know. The crown does not look kindly on that, so I hear.
Yeah.
but if he had titled it the Freedom Cookbook, you know, that would have been less scary, huh? Or the Liberty Cookbook. But the anarchist cookbook.
No, that's too scary. But like you know, he put it together when he was being he's being an edgy, angsty teenager. So,
and all of that military information of how to improvise all types of explosives if you're an insurgent behind enemy lines is all available out there on all of these military surplus books.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can just walk into any military surplus store and pick up off the rack. But if you do that, you know, but if you buy it all in one location or download it for free all in one location, and that one location happens to be titled Anarchist, oh no, it's the end of the world.
Are people listening to the show who actually think that censoring that book is a good idea? Is that possible?
I would hope.
People listening to the show?
You never know who's listening to the show. I mean.
Right.
Hopefully by the end of them listening to the show, they realize that censoring books is probably bad, and charging people with terrorism for owning copies of books is probably bad.
Yeah. Disagreeing with me is probably bad.
Yeah. I mean, unless there are feds listening, the feds might think that it was probably a good idea or something.
Yeah, feds will, of course, think it's a good idea.
Any feds out there listening?
I think Cobra Commander of the G.I. Joe show thinks that the book is bad. Needs to be censored.
Well,
just going back to my childhood days.
Yeah, it's dangerous. I mean, you know, like weaponry in the hands of your average citizen. I mean, goodness gracious. Like, what's the world coming to? Can't have that.
Well, I tried to scroll through this article, though. It's pretty big.
Yeah, it is.
Well, to get back to the article a little bit, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he went and joined up with the YPG in 2016 through Facebook. And, you know, he studied military strategy as part of his university coursework, which probably explains why he might have a copy of Anarchist Cookbook, because that would be military strategy. But he had actually read a book that was a pamphlet authored by one of the members of the Kurdistan's Workers' Party, which got him kind of interested in the fight with the YPG.
And what does YPG stand for?
It's the People's Protection Unit.
Okay.
Yeah, and the YPG is probably like an acronym for... Some Kurdish words or something like that.
So. People's Protection Unit is what it stands for.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be back for, the last segment of this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
That was not a very good rooster.
Well, talking about this Josh Walker guy.
Yeah.
You know, so he gets over to Iraq and he flies into Iraq to go meet up with the Kurds, and ends up, you know, going on some like 8-hour trek through the desert to go to where he needs to go, you know, no food and water, but you know, he's over there for months and months and months doing all, I mean, if you really, to get into it, there's so many they talk about different, you know, battles he was in on this article from The Intercept. So I highly recommend people just go over to The Intercept and find this article and read, you know, read for themselves about, you know, the heroism of this guy.
Right.
Then, you know, how he was actually over there fighting ISIS when our governments won't. And they use the royal hour, I guess. You know, when the governments of the world, because it's not just the United States government refusing to fight ISIS, you know, it's also the British right. government, all these other governments that, mm-hmm. you know, they're, you know, they go over there and they get into their other little battles with, you know, with their other governments. And, you know, you got like one group actually worried about what ISIS is doing. Well, everyone over there is just using ISIS as an excuse.
Yeah.
You know, the United States is just using ISIS as an excuse to go mess with Syria and Russia.
Right. Yeah, you know. It would have been really convenient if they just sort of invented ISIS on their own for that purpose, right?
That would be pretty convenient, wouldn't it?
What are you suggesting, Daryl?
I'm suggesting that would be very convenient, Diana. Allegedly.
Yeah.
But, you know, so, he in mid-December last year, he, you know, after having, he was in a pretty bad battle, and in mid-December last year, he decided it was time to return home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he returns home, and he's at the airport, and, well, he's waiting in line to make it through passport control. He notices some men in suits lingering behind him. And it turned out they were from London's Metropolitan Police and Wales Extremism and Counterterrorism Unit. And they brought him in the back of a unmarked police car and was taken to Wales, where he spent the night in a jail cell after returning from his heroism. They confiscated his belongings, including his YPG uniform, cell phone diaries, notebooks, and all that kind of stuff. The following day, they interrogated him, the guy's in shock. He didn't know what was going on. He survived this. He survived fighting a war. And he talks about this guy's a young, scrawny kid, and he survived fighting a war against a very brutal government, and he survived, and now he's arrested.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's estimated that there's been about 3,000 Westerners who have so far traveled to the Middle East to go fight against the Islamic State. Many American fighters have battled alongside the YPG and other militias and re-entered, like, the U.S. without difficulties and stuff like that. There really hasn't been too much, too much problems with people returning after fighting ISIS. But for this guy, having a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook seems to be the only real difference, is he had a copy of this book. So he's been charged, and it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the fast way of saying it.
You know, because they interrogated him, they released him on bail. He was not charged with committing any crimes.
Right.
But then they searched his house and found a copy of the Anarchist Cookbook in one of his drawers, and they charged him with the Terrorism Act.
That's crazy.
Government for you.
Yep. Absolutely.
You do what they claim to be doing for them, yep. And actually go out and do it better. And
right.
They don't like that.
Nope, they definitely don't like it. You actually do something productive for freedom.
Let this be a lesson to all of you.
Yeah, no doubt. All right.
Don't actually fight for freedom.
No, yeah.
Fight those people for freedom. We'll be back.
All right, we will be back after the trip to the market.
Worms.
Worms.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee.
Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Is that the intro?
That can do it.
All right. James.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends. Broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Peace Plaza on the artificial satellite Libpair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. Please insert the purple wire in your cortex now.
It's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows use and reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
That was my call.
Didn't know he was joining us, did you?
I love his crisp pronunciation, you know?
All right. So, okay, so we're back. And again, you know, if you're just tuning in, this is Freedom Fiends, and this is Diana the Laughing Kitty, and we have Daryl. And James, neither of whom have a wrestling name as of yet. So we'll have to remedy that at some point. But we, you know, there's some disturbing news that came across our desks today regarding a woman in Minneapolis who was shot dead by police, Minneapolis police, after calling 911 herself for some disturbances near her home. She's originally from Australia, and apparently, and these are some of the other things that I read. There's also, there's a couple of articles here, one from NBC News, another from the Washington Post, that she called 911 because she heard a disturbance near her home, thinking it was maybe a sexual assault. Apparently she, and really like no other information has come out, like no real details have come out about, you know, what actually happened. But some eyewitnesses did say that she came to the police car and was talking to the officer who was driving, and that the other cop reached across the driver and shot her dead. And as it turns out, and you know, I'm not, you know, I don't know like what difference this makes or anything. The cop that shot this woman, this poor woman, I just want to go ahead and, you know, definitely say her name. Her name is Justine Ruschick. I think that's how you pronounce it. Ruschick. She had taken the last name of her, fiance, Damon. Yeah, and she was just like, you know, according to friends and family, she was just a peaceful woman, had some concerns that she wanted to call the police for, which is a kind of a normal thing for people to do. You know, some crap is going on next door that you're concerned about, you know, maybe even concerned for your own safety. For whatever reason, you call 911, cops come, and they shoot you dead.
And you know, it
it does happen. You know, it's just still I'm sorry, but how anyone could continue to defend the police under circumstances like this, I just don't understand. Like, I just really don't understand. Because as far as I'm concerned, I mean, sure, yeah, they're not all going around killing innocent people, but they support it. You know, I mean, basically by, you know, the, I mean, just, I don't know, just the fact that they're, I don't know, I'm almost at a loss for words for this. I mean, and yeah, you know, there, I think there's some people that are saying, you know, well, so people are starting to pay attention because, or there are people are paying attention now because this is a white woman. Okay, so this is not the first time, you know, it can happen to anyone, you know.
Mm-hmm. Including a, you know, kind of a middle-class white woman being shot dead by a black police officer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's a Somali immigrant, actually.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear the whole, you know, we need to build the wall, blah, 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 like that. You know, that to me, that doesn't really, I don't know. You know, it's just, I mean, yeah,
him being an immigrant doesn't really have any bearing on it.
No,
because this is just what police do.
Yeah.
The only difference between this and other police shootings is now, you know, it's coming out of the urban areas and now it's in the suburban areas where, you know, you have the more affluent people being shot by police. This is just now, you know, a white person being shot by the police. And hopefully this is what it takes for white people to start realizing that, hey, we do have a police problem in America.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, because, I mean, I think the rote response that a lot of people have is, oh, well, if he was obeying the law or if he didn't reach in his pocket or blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just like, okay, what about this woman? What the heck did she do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, what law was she breaking? Like, what command was she, you know, not obeying or whatever? You know, and it's just, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Insanely ridiculous. And I don't know how anyone could defend this.
Right. This is in the same kind of area, I believe. Well, same state anyway, as the Philando Castile shooting.
Yeah, it was also a Minneapolis police officer.
Yeah, which
shot.
Which the guy said he was. You know, what did he say? He was a concealed pistol holder, and the police just shot him dead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the other thing too about this whole incident is that both of the cops had their body cameras turned off.
Which is interesting, because I'm pretty sure they're not supposed to turn those off unless they're like going to the bathroom or something.
That is really convenient.
It's really convenient that they both had their body cameras off.
Yeah. And, yeah, so what's up with that? And, of course, there are no answers. And then, you know, and then, like, reading some of these ridiculous things that, you know, I want to assure you that I understand why so many people have so many questions. You know, just this is from a statement from the chief of police regarding this officer. You know, it's just... You know, I have many of the same questions, and it is why we immediately asked for an external and independent investigation into the officer involved shooting death. Well, I mean, yeah, they're going to all be questioned, and of course they're going to, like, want to get all their stories straight and all that. And you know, and there was some, you know, something else in this article, and I'm actually looking at the Washington Post article, you know, saying, you know, don't demonize the police for this. Really? Are you serious? Like that, I mean.
This is just what they do.
Yeah,
I think the hasty generalization of all the cops are like this is going to happen. That's what people are going to do. In the same way as the hasty generalization of, I guess, all civilians are dangerous, so shoot them first,
you know, or whatever. What the police believe.
Yeah, I'm kind of like wondering: is that what? How did this tragedy happen with this officer? Moore, what was his name? Noor, N-O-O-R.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean. That it's the kind of thing where I wish I had an intelligence agency to send my agents in to find out the real deal, but I don't because they're all, you know, imaginary. So I don't really know what happens. I'm just guessing. I'm reading these articles coming from these mainstream sources, and I'm guessing. I'm wondering how much accuracy. What's the real deal going on here? You know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you probably it's doubtful that. I mean, especially if there was no video or audio, it's doubtful. I mean, you'll have eyewitness testimony and everything, but I don't know. I mean, to me, it's just doubtful that the real story, you know, will come out anytime soon. And then you also have Jeff Sessions saying, you know, We will aggressively prosecute federal or state officers who violate the civil rights of our citizens, but we will take care to never demean or offer unwarranted criticism of the honorable, brave, and professional law enforcement officers who protect us every day. Does he not like pay attention to his, like the Supreme Court and their rulings at all? They are not obliged to protect and serve. That that was an actual Supreme Court ruling. Does he? I mean, seriously.
Well, of course. Well, they still got to spread that lie that police protect and serve.
Right.
You know, because the police are the enforcement arm of the state. Mm-hmm. So of course the state and its congressmen or whatever. Senators and other people part of the state apparatus are not going to like, seeing people question police or people not supportive of police. Mm-hmm. So they're going to continue spreading the lie that police protect and serve because, their positions of power rest on the fact that the police are going to be there to shoot middle-aged, middle-class white women. They need to make sure that police are there to kill, concealed pistol holders for, properly identifying themselves as such. They need to make sure that police are there to, confiscate their guns when they want to take away guns. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people don't realize this when it comes to gun confiscation. It's going to be the police that do that.
I was actually in a face beef. I don't know.
You were in a face beef?
I was in a face beef a couple of weeks ago. And it wasn't, people were beefing. I was trying to be reasonable with this person, but there was a question as to, I have someone next door who's like disturbing me in a certain way, and I'm not going to go into detail about it. Any ideas of what I should do? And of course, people were like, well, go talk to your neighbor. Duh. Mm-hmm. Like do that. Or, if that doesn't work, call the landlord. Somebody actually suggested calling the police. And of course they got like ripped to shreds because this was a pretty libertarian anarchist thread. Yeah. And, it was like, I wish that, I'm thinking, surely this person has seen this, or is aware of this having happened. This is what can happen if you call the police, God forbid you get shot. But it's like I would be reluctant to call the police just because I'd be afraid of my dog getting shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're trained to shoot the dogs right away.
Right. And my dog is super friendly. She goes and she'll jump up on you. She's a little beagle. And it's just like I would go berserk if something like that happened. It's just like that would be the extreme last resort. For me at this point ever.
Yeah, because they'll show up and they'll show up and shoot you, and it doesn't matter who you are. They have no problem executing anyone down the street, and they'll get paid vacation for it.
The fellow that shot Philando Castile, he's basically paid to leave the force.
These people are on the officers involved in this are on paid, they're on administrative leave.
It's standard. So, all right, we'll be back after this short break. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at GetCell411.com. That's GetCell411.com.
We're back. The things we talk about during break, don't y'all wish you knew? All right, so yeah, I guess just to come back to the article that we were just discussing, or the incident that we were just discussing. This a poor woman who's shot and killed leaves behind her fiance and her future stepson, and it's just really sad. I mean, she had had a bright future. She had a lot of people that really thought a lot of her. It sounds like from these articles, she was a yoga instructor and she taught meditation. People definitely described her as a nonviolent person. So, the thing about it is, though, is that I do think this has a potential to turn into for lack of a better word, race issue. I don't really believe in races, but I think that's kind of how people tend to identify folks of different ethnicities. That it's definitely not that, her death at the hands of police matters more than anyone else. But I mean, it could very well, shine a light maybe on police brutality and James, this is what you were saying, right, about how this shows that it can happen to anyone.
Yes, it can. It can happen to anyone.
I don't have really a whole lot more to say about it at this point. But do you during the break, Daryl said this was like a public service announcement for, if you can avoid calling the police, just don't do it. Mm-hmm. Just don't do it. Do avoid it, rather.
Unless, of course, it's the last thing, because it doesn't even matter if you get shot, then you can call the police. If for some reason you're in a situation where it actually does not matter that you're going to get shot, go ahead and call the police. Like, in other words, bullets are already flying around and you might get hit at any moment by someone. You don't even know who it is. Okay. Maybe then. But until that happens, if you hear some trash cans tipping over behind your place, that this is exactly what could happen. And it doesn't matter how old you are or what country you come from or how much melanin is in your skin.
And and here's part of the problem, I think, with this, particularly for a lot of, people in this country, maybe the middle class in this country, well-educated, tend to be sort of anti-gun. And for whatever reason, and maybe the smart thing to do would be to arm yourself, to make sure that you can protect yourself rather than calling the police. If you're in any danger, learn to protect yourself. I just can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, and there are stages
of protection.
What y'all think about that? I think there are stages of protection. I think that it's good to have layers of protection. You have sensors out there. It's good to have non-lethal defense as well as lethal defense. If you're going to be trained with lethal, also have non-lethal, please. So that you at least have that choice. Do you really want to make someone have a really bad day by making a hole through them? Or would you like to have them scratching at their eyes and face, the next 15 minutes?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. Deadly force, that's definitely not the first thing that unless, you're at risk of death yourself or someone that you love, I don't think that should be the first thing that you go for.
And please understand what the regulations are in your area. In some places you have castle doctrine kind of things where, anything goes, yep, he came in my house, broke in. So, and in some places they, where I live, unfortunately, they want you to run away and let them steal stuff from you. Hawaii's got some pretty bad legislation on that one. It like where you are, James? Hmm. Are you allowed to shoot people who break into your home studio?
Allowed to? No.
Would you be prosecuted if you self-defended yourself with a break-in?
That's the thing, is that you'll be prosecuted. And it's up to you to defend yourself against that prosecution, because they'll prosecute you no matter what, even if you have the castle doctrine, stand your ground laws, whatever. You will be prosecuted, and that will just be your defense.
You know, so you're going to spend, you know, $50,000 defending yourself for something that the law says that you can, you know, do and defend yourself. That's just, you know, the way the government actually works.
Meow.
You know.
Meow.
Freedom feeds.
Worms. We'll be back. We'll be back, y'all. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Okay, so this is not a very good segue, but I don't know, like, not doesn't really have a lot to do with what we've just been talking about. I mean, unless I don't know, I guess AI. Let's see. Artificial intelligence, another scary A word.
There is a segue.
Yeah.
AI cops could be the future, and you could have, like, Judge Dredd stuff.
Oh, yeah. There's that. Yeah. We've referenced a couple of movies regarding AI. But we have about, let's see, three articles here.
RoboCop. I was thinking of RoboCop. It's like, if you didn't like the human cop that shot your mom, then maybe you might be extra infuriated by the RoboCop that chops your mom, you know, shoots your mom.
He was more of a cyborg, wasn't he?
I think Judge Dredd was more of a cyborg, but RoboCop was more artificial intelligence, if I recall correctly.
Okay. Yeah, that wasn't like one of my kind of movies, really.
It's pretty graphic.
Well, it's not, yeah, I can handle graphic. I watch Game of Thrones.
Ooh, that's completely edgy. Different kind of graphic.
Yeah.
like a graphics interface card. You know?
So we have this one article, and all three again are Elon Musk's crusade to stop AI. He's meeting with politicians and governors, and, you know, calling for more regulations, and he's clearly quite fearful. And so one of the things that, and Michael sent us this earlier, and it had to do with Facebook and these bots on Facebook that, interestingly, started talking in their own language.
Oh, right. They started making up their own language together.
Yeah, they started making up their own language, and nobody really knows what was said between them. But then they were kind of like, then they were, you know, required. I don't know. I don't know. Somebody, I guess, reprogrammed it or whatever, that they need to speak English so that we can understand them. That was pretty interesting. I didn't quite understand, like, what the purpose of the bots were. I think it's basically just a. I think that's what makes those weird advertisements come across your thread. And for me, what's weird is that I see them, or come across my feed. I see them, and it's like, wait, I don't know where they got that. I was actually just thinking about that.
Yeah, the advertising
and suddenly it shows
stuff
up on my feed. These bots, they communicate with each other and they negotiate with each other to try to determine what apparently what kind of like advertisements show up on whose feeds and things like that.
They have
algorithms that basically they look at your search history. They look at what you're, you know, Googling and stuff like that, and they can actually determine things about you based on what you Google and read your mind and predict the future based on that. There's a There was a story I read maybe probably a couple years ago, about how Google knew this girl was pregnant before she did. It started showing her ads for baby stuff, and it knew that she was pregnant before she even knew she was pregnant, just based on her search patterns and what she was searching for.
And that's very doable nowadays.
Yeah. It's very doable, but because we give so much permission to them to, all our emails go through Google. They scan all our emails. They know what we're talking about. Everything we post on Facebook is being cataloged and entered into these algorithms for advertising purposes. Where you're at, your travel patterns are all being logged by, Google location services. Like, for example, I was sitting in the Taco Bell drive-thru, and I'm waiting for my order, and I open up Face Beef just to check, see what's going on with Face Beef, and I'm hit with advertisements for Taco Bell,
Wow.
And that kind of stuff happens all the time. They'll even sync up, with radio advertisements to Face Beef advertisements and stuff like that. If you're at different locations, like there was one time I was listening to the radio and there was an ad for something, and then I open up Facebook and the same exact thing is being advertised to. So they'll actually synchronize your ads to where you're hearing it on the radio and seeing it on your phone at the same time.
That creeps me out a lot.
And all of that's done with, algorithms and stuff, artificial intelligence, I guess you could say, all of that. And that's just where we're at right now with advertising, where, our entire lives are completely cataloged and surveilled just for advertising purposes.
So the extreme version of artificial intelligence is something a bit more than that, right?
Yeah, some a bit more than just having targeted advertising, which is why targeted advertising is so effective. It really is. Traditional advertising is not nearly as effective as targeted advertising because of this very thing, is that you can target what people are looking for. You can have, if you Google something, and then you open up Facebook, you're probably going to be met with an advertisement for something related to that Google search.
I knew that, definitely.
And you've noticed that.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed that. It was just it has, and like you said, apparently it keeps a record of somehow of any searches I've done in the past, even. Somehow, because like I said, just thinking about something and then suddenly it shows up on my feed is like, whoa. So apparently it's something that I've Googled or, searched for in some way, shape or form in the past.
Or something just related to what you've Googled, Because that's how it works. It's just the stuff that you put in there, the emails you send, the searches you search, or your public posts on Facebook and stuff like that. They catalog that stuff. They know you better than you. There's actually, they were talking a number of years ago that they're going to be able to predict crime based on Google searches, Minority Report. Yeah, Minority Report stuff. Uh-huh. And that's pretty creepy.
Yeah. James, you're under arrest for the pre-crime.
Pre-crime. That's coming with this stuff. And I can understand why Elon Musk
getting
would be
naked
so
on the stage.
Fearful.
Now that you've already done that.
I can understand why Elon Musk would be so fearful of if that technology continues to grow, because already what they can do with just the advertising algorithms and how much they can know about us. You compare that to the computing power that they have with all this knowledge of who you are based on your advertising profiles. It's kind of creepy to think, what would artificial intelligence be able to do now? What would they be able to predict? Right. What would they be able to see about us? Mm-hmm. Would they become our robot overlords? Probably.
Right. Well, just the fact that, that these bots created their own language. just out of the blue. And it's actually in this article from news.com.au, and it's like, again, it's, you know, another Elon Musk on crusade against AI, but it goes in a little bit more detail about it. It was saying that because there was no reward for sticking to English, the bot-to-bot conversation led to divergence from human language as the agents developed their own language for negotiating. And so, yeah, it's like, do we want to be able to eavesdrop on what our machines are talking about? That it raises that question.
Do we want to? I mean, yeah, or now does I'm anybody want to?
Well, yeah, I mean, that.
I want someone to do it for me, like, actually.
Well, yeah.
I'm lazy that way. As far as the singularity of artificial intelligence taking over, I just want to put some of the best people on this one and just relax on the beach knowing that it's all well taken care of. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or I guess I could sit here and fret about it in the dark confines of my little rental.
Right. That's...
Is there some other option? I could use a VPN like I do so that I get instead like Chechnyan commercials on YouTube, which is kind of fun.
That's a good point. There's not a lot. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And,
but they can see past that stuff.
I would say, yeah, I don't use a VPN thinking, oh, I've just now hidden myself from the government. Yeah. Yay. No.
Well, no, even from advertising and stuff. Like Google Chrome, for example, your browser is linked with a certain identification number that when you use Google Chrome, it knows who you are automatically.
Oh, it's too late for me.
Yeah. So it's too late.
No, wait. I can use other browsers.
Firefox.
Yeah, I could try to use Firefox.
Only again. Use Google Chrome for stuff you want them to know. But that was apparently that Elon Musk's plan to colonize Mars has actually been a backup plan for an AI takeover the Earth the entire time.
Definitely. Yep. He straight up says that.
Yeah,
and then what was the guy's name? Starts with HASS. I remember that. Anyway, so he's like, well, AI can follow you there.
Yeah.
You know, he can't escape it.
Can't escape AI.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I definitely think it can happen. I don't, you know, his whole idea of, you know, in this other article and on Recode.net, he's like, he's told a group of America's governors that we need to regulate AI before it's too late. I'm not down with the regulation so much.
No, that seems like a bad way to solve it, but...
Right. I mean, you're going to have people that are going to be all for it, and you're going to have people that are going to be like, no, you know, but and I mean, who knows?
Regulating AI, though. Regulating AI seems impossible.
But yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, if ultimately,
it's going to happen. The militaries are working on creating one, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. It's definitely going to happen. I mean, obviously, you know, something that kind of technology in the hands of the average person is dangerous. You know, it must be in the hands of the military, the people who are there for our good and are, you know, that protect our freedoms and all that kind of crap. Yeah, they should definitely have their hands on AI.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Too much freaking regulation and taxation. It's just ridiculous.
Freedom Beans are back.
When are y'all going to realize that?
That regulations are bad?
Taxation is bad.
We got word from our benevolent overlord, Michael W. Dean.
What was the word?
There is a rumor that Mark Zuckerberg may be throwing his hat in the ring for 2020.
Huh.
Oh, that's cute.
That is real cute.
Yeah. So with the, Mark Zuckerberg is leading this AI thing with the, what we were talking about, the bots that have Elon Musk so worried are, developed by Facebook. those are Facebook bots, right?
Yeah. So maybe Elon Musk should throw his hat in the ring too.
Yeah, maybe Elon Musk versus Mark Zuckerberg for the fate of the world.
You know, I'm just going to throw in Richard Branson there too, and just
Musk, he's not from the U.S. is he? Elon Musk, or is he?
I'm not sure.
Am I mistaken about that?
I think that's the thing. Elon Musk and Richard Branson did not start off as being born
in the U.S. Yeah, he's from South Africa, so he could not throw his hat in the ring to defeat Mark Zuckerberg, who will enslave us all with his AI bots.
Redemption here.
Where's the...
It's supposed to be redemption, not more depression.
Well, yeah. In good news, thankfully, the fascist governor, Rick Snyder in Michigan, has finally decided to give us a little bit of freedom and has lifted the state ban.
Gave y'all a little bit of freedom.
And just a little taste. He signed legislation Thursday that was introduced back in March.
Let the leash out a little bit.
They repealed a law that made selling or possession of spring-assisted knives a misdemeanor in the state of Michigan. So basically what they've done is they've given us the ability or our freedom back to carry knives, that a pocket knife that could be opened with the flick of a button. Because basically what was happening is Michigan was...
So you could rumble in the streets.
Yeah.
West Side Story style.
There are many knives that would fall under this category that are sold at major retailers throughout the state. And Michigan prosecutors and law enforcement, so there was like uneven enforcement throughout the state on these different knives, because you'd have, a Kershaw knife, I think is the brand, where, it's open with, the flick of, a little lever. And so, this law is not about, the double-edged stiletto knives that are commonly portrayed in films and Hollywood movies, according to the author of this. This is about updating the law concerning spring-assisted knives, such as utility knives commonly carried by police officers and members of the National Guard.
Who are the only people who should actually have things like that? Don't you agree?
Definitely not. But one thing that's definitely nice is that, while this did not repeal the ban on stiletto blade being carried concealed in Michigan, because the common the Italian switchblade that you see, in the Hollywood movies, they are generally a double-edged blade. This does not give us our freedom to carry those. However, single blade that open, at the flick of a button, now we have got just a slight bit of freedom back. And we're able to have assistance in the opening of our knives in Michigan now, even though, people have been carrying them for years. They finally updated the law to what's being sold at, Walmart. Because up until this point, Walmart, all kinds of just knife stores, pretty much any hunting store would fall under this misdemeanor charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then a switchblade is not, I mean, that's specifically the stiletto knife, right? Or is that just Just that's a just like a general name for
general
for
name, yeah.
A spring assisted blade. Okay, well, cool.
So the redemption
congratulations,
is the,
James.
Thank you. Thank you for that. So. And as a public service announcement, that the whole show was, if you hear bumps outside, don't call the cops, because now you know what can happen. Mm-hmm. And consider that AI legislation is probably not going to help you.
Oh, and in 2020, vote for nobody.